but I don't want. Keep coming up with love, but it's so slashed and torn.
Why?
Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are, this is Eric.
By the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is true.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road. And, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew. And tonight, well, let's find out from Wolfgang.
Oh, Heidi, your point is so gross.
It's the 1997 movie Gross Point Blank, directed by George Armitage, director of The Big Bounce, Miami Blues, and 1971's Private Duty Nurses.
Is that a porn?
No, it's one of those nudie cutie movies, I think. But he also was the co-writer.
Wait. I'm sorry. What?
A nudie cutie movie from the 70s.
I have never heard that term before.
Nudie cutie. I will put a link in the notes.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Sandra Bernhard, and you know my motto, any excuse to get naked. Like tonight, for example, it's nudie cutie night. We'll be showing the best naughty films of the 60s, all tightly trimmed for your maximum viewing pleasure.
So he's also the co-writer of a television film that I'm very fond of called The Late Shift, about Letterman and Leno.
Yeah, that was great.
That's really good.
Yeah.
But he directed Miami Blues?
He did.
It's a weird movie.
Parts of this movie are a direct reflection of Miami Blues. For instance, the ending. Apparently, Miami Blues has a downer ending that audiences did not appreciate. So this movie has a more happy ending. So, Brother Jay, is this one on your list?
It is. So these are my original notes. I appended them for today.
Now, when did we watch this for the show? When was that? How long ago?
I don't date these, but so in my notebook, Snatch, and then In Bruges, and then Gross Point Mix. This is pretty old.
December of 2015, maybe.
I wrote down March, but...
Oh, could be March. March of 2011.
I have March, but again, I have no reference point. I just wrote it down, so... but I had watched this at one point, because it was streaming on Netflix, and it was going to go away. Tonight, I saw it was back on Netflix, so we watched it tonight. And I love this movie. I think it's a cute movie. It's got lots of funny moving parts, and it's just kind of ridiculous and over the top.
Brother Drew?
I first saw this movie when it came out on video. So I was in college, and I was just a few years removed from high school. So it was a different perspective for me watching a movie about a dude going back to his high school reunion. I had a different take on it this time around, for sure.
Now, did you go to your high school reunion?
No, I've not been to any of them. What year is it? My 20th one was a couple years ago.
Yeah, I think this would be my 30th.
Yeah, my 25th would have been last year, but instead of that, we got together as a memorial to Debbie, so.
Yeah, by the way, Snatch and In Bruges were released in March of 2015. So who knows when you recorded them?
So they must have been like February of 2015. It turns out that's 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like we've been doing this that long.
It doesn't. So, first reactions for everybody? I mean, I think I saw this movie on video, and it could not have been... like, it was not a new release or anything. I didn't rush to see this movie. Although, on rewatch, it's about great. I think I love this movie.
Yeah, part of it is it's got some great writing. It's got some just goofy sight gags. It's got some great bit of smart comedy, and it has an awesome, amazing soundtrack.
It does. Its soundtrack is, and it's got a great cast too.
It does. It's chock full of great acting, and of course a cameo from Ann Cusack. So.
Oh no! It's got every Cusack but Dad Cusack.
Yeah.
Because Brother Cusack shows up in a waiter role, I think.
So this movie made money. It was budgeted at like $15 million. It made 28. It's a fun little ride. I mean, it's infinitely rewatchable. So.
I think so. I think there are a couple parts that we'll see if Drew says that were just too much.
I had some problems with this movie.
Okay. Did you like it overall? Would you give this, I mean, we don't have to sum up whether it was worth it yet, but did you enjoy yourself watching it again?
No. But the more I think about it, the more my fondness for it grows. So I didn't enjoy the experience of watching it, but I'm liking thinking about it.
Okay. Well, okay, let's start off a little bit general. What do we all think about John Cusack?
I like John Cusack.
I think he's really good. I think even when he's in bad movies, he gives really good performances. I don't like this version of him, though. I don't like kind of the smart guy, chatty slacker dude. Even though he's a man of action in this movie, he still kind of has that slacker persona.
You like him better as a neurotic guy?
Like a serial killer?
I mean, like, do you like the identity John Cusack, or do you like the Room 1408 Cusack? The Frozen Ground Cusack?
I like the Cusack where his character is taking things a little bit more seriously. God, I don't remember the name of the movie, but he was in a movie with Cate Blanchett and Billy Bob Thornton that I liked quite a bit.
Oh, Better Off Dead?
That's not the movie I'm talking about, but I remember that movie.
He wasn't in Bandits, was he? Was that the movie you're thinking of?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Was that him?
Yeah, I think so. I remember seeing that in the theater.
Yeah, but like I didn't really like his character here. I didn't like his character in High Fidelity.
What?
Yeah. Can I tell you, I've never seen High Fidelity.
Oh, you got to see it. It's a great movie.
I like Nick Hornby's books. Okay, that's not quite true. I like the one Nick Hornby book that I read, A Long Way Down. But I kind of avoided High Fidelity as being too hip, too cool for me. Another question I had just off the top is, how do you guys feel about ska music?
I'm buying with ska.
Eh.
Yeah, I'm kind of mad about it, I guess. I mean,
yeah, I mean, I was never like a big ska fan. I mean, you know, I like a little reggae, and so, you know, I like a little up-tempo reggae, but the whole ska aesthetic never really did it for me. So where there's really great songs on the soundtrack, there's a lot of stuff that I don't really care about either. We're talk separately about the soundtrack, but...
Yeah, I own probably 3/4 of the soundtrack.
We know they had to make 2 soundtracks, right?
That wouldn't surprise me.
They made Volume 1, and it made so much money, they put out Volume 2.
Oh, awesome. Well, I'll have to take a look. I meant to take a look, but I got trapped in the West Wing.
Yeah, well, we're gonna... Yeah, we'll have West Wing talk a little bit later, I think. Although maybe we'll have lots of West Wing talk next week, we'll see.
By the way, I was thinking of The Ice Harvest.
Oh.
Which was not Cate Blanchett.
And who was it? Bruce Willis, who was in Bandits? With Cate Blanchett, Billy Bob Thornton. Right.
Yep, that sounds right. I liked him in Con Air. I thought he was great in Con Air.
Yeah. I think I just like John Cusack. I mean, he just, like, although one thing I, you know, after discussing him with one of my favorite actors, not with my favorite actor, but the mother of one of my favorite actors, that actor being Connor Rockham, who starred in a movie with John Cusack, filmed in Alaska, I didn't realize that John Cusack is actually quite tall. So when watching this movie, I realized he does tower over a lot of his co-stars.
Bandits, Bruce Willis, Billy Bob Thornton, Kate Blanchett.
I think I saw that in the theater with our grandmother.
I think I've seen it with your parents multiple times.
It should probably go on a list at some point.
No.
It should probably not go on a list at
some point. No, but Ice Harvest should.
I want to have put a simple plan on the list as well.
Yes. That'd be a good one.
People who like Bandits also liked...
Reds.
The Jackal.
Oh, The Jackal is...
Mercury Rising.
Anything with Bruce Willis.
The Whole Nine Yards.
Yeah.
Hostage.
Looper. Moonlighting.
16 Blocks.
Some sort of Bruno.
Hearts of War.
Boy Scout. Striking Distance.
12 Monkeys.
Not on the list.
Did someone say Hudson Hawk already?
Oh, no, not yet.
Seagram's Wine Coolers commercials?
Moonlighting.
Probably harmonica advertisements. So, I was pleasantly surprised. Okay, I think I've come to a realization here that I don't really like Bill Murray just as a concept, but I think I like Dan Aykroyd as a concept.
Well, I think Dan Aykroyd plays pretty close to himself in this movie because he's just kind of batshit crazy, insane, paranoid.
No, but I think that Bill Murray also plays himself in most things too, and he's just an asshole.
No, I rather like Bill Murray, so.
I could be wrong on both counts.
You can keep Dan Aykroyd, I'll keep Bill Murray.
Okay. Sorry, Drew. I think you get...
I do not want Chevy Chase.
No, nobody wants Chevy Chase.
No, that's a hard pass.
So I was happy to see Dan Aykroyd as the, I guess we could set it up a little bit.
The being, grocer.
Yes, Martin Blank, played by John Cusack, is a professional assassin who is a little disillusioned with his career, maybe, and... His rival assassin is Dan Aykroyd. He plays the grocer. And the grocer's trying to actually hire Martin to join his cartel.
His union.
His union, yes.
Do all hitmen happen to drive black Lincoln Continentals?
Oh, I don't know, but it's great for this movie.
It is.
The cars in this movie actually make a statement, which I think is fun. Because it takes place in Detroit. But there's a running gag about how nobody drives American cars. Except, of course, for the hitman. So, in our cast of characters, so John Cusack is, he's approximately 10 years out of high school. He graduated in 1986 from Grosse Pointe High School in the suburbs of Detroit. And he has got his invitation, or his secretary got the invitation for his high school reunion.
And she faxes him in his car on a color fax.
Yes, yes, with the heat paper. The thermal paper, sorry, not heat paper. The thermal paper. And she is Joan Cusack, who's hilarious, as always. Martin is having a kind of an existential career crisis and seeks the help of a therapist who does not necessarily want to help him. Or does not want to be his therapist, but is sort of forced into it. His therapist played brilliantly, I think, by Alan Arkin.
Shouldn't you be taking notes or something?
I'm not taking notes, Martin, because I'm not your doctor.
Please don't start with that stuff again.
Martin, I'm emotionally involved with you.
How are you emotionally involved with me?
I'm afraid of you.
You're afraid of me.
And that constitutes an emotional involvement, and it would be unethical for me to work with you under those circumstances.
Don't you think maybe you're just upset because I told you what I do for a living, and you got upset, and you're letting it interfere with our dynamic?
Whoa. Martin, you didn't tell me what you did for a living.
Yes, I did.
You didn't tell me what you did for a living for 4 sessions. Then you told me, and I said, I don't want to work with you. And yet you come back every week at the same time. That's a difficulty for me. On top of that, if you've committed a crime or if you're thinking about committing a crime, I have to tell the authorities.
I know the law, okay? But I don't want to be withholding. I'm very serious about this process. And I know where you live.
Oh, now see, that wasn't a nice thing to say. That wasn't designed to make me feel good. That's a kind of a not too subtle intimidation. And I get filled with anxiety when you talk about something like that.
Come on,
I mean, that's...
Come on. I was just kidding, all right? The thought never crossed my mind.
You did think of it, Martin. You thought of it and then you said it. And now I'm left with the aftermath of that, thinking I gotta be creative in a really interesting way now or Martin's gonna blow my brains out. You're holding me hostage here. That's not right.
I just wanna work. Okay, there's some issues that I need to work on in my life. I've read your books, your bestsellers, on the top 20.
They were both ghostwritten, Martin.
What, The Annihilation of Death?
Yeah.
Kill Who, A Warrior's Dilemma? I read it, New York Times top 20.
Well, I don't know what to say.
Well, what do you say to other patients, you know? I don't know, how does it work? Ask me how I'm feeling.
How do you feel?
I'm feeling uneasy, man. I'm just dispassionate, I'm bored. It's hard to stay in a good mood. I've had problems with work, you know, concept execution stuff, and just ill at ease.
Well, look, Martin, I don't want to suggest anything that might be uncomfortable for you, but you might consider the possibility that part of your problem, part of the thing that's making you so miserable is the angst over killing a lot of people. Maybe I just put it in the background there.
Come on. If I show up at your door, chances are you did something to bring me there. Okay? I don't care about that stuff.
You don't care about what stuff?
You know, morality. I don't want to talk about work. Because I don't think necessarily what a person does for a living reflects who he is.
I loved Alan Arkin in this movie.
It's great. It's enough of a role that he gets to steal every scene he's in.
I didn't really understand what was going on in his final scene, but he was great nonetheless.
Is it another patient or his wife or something is crying? Is that the scene we're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he was trying to get the phone disconnected before either he was threatened or Martin revealed some kind of murderous intent in front of somebody else.
Yeah, I couldn't figure out why he was trying to destroy his answering machine. Because he was just getting fired. That was it.
But turns out Martin, he sort of screws up a contract. And so he has to take another contract to get himself off of a shit list. And that contract happens to take place in the vicinity of Grosse Pointe. So he's going to go to his reunion anyway, at least as a cover. And that's when we learn that the love of his life, he ditched her at the prom in his senior year. And she's never forgiven him for it. He's never forgotten her. And that is the lovely Debbie Newberry, played by Minnie Driver, who I think is just absolutely cute.
She does a fantastic job, too, with the accent.
Exactly, yeah. I thought her accent was pretty good. Although, I think her accent reminded me a little bit of Judy Shineland.
He says cryptic things and is gone abruptly again. Oh, what is this I'm feeling here? What, is this pain? Is this panic? Is it pleasure? Am I hungry? Who's hungry? Okay, first 5 calls will receive a sentimental breakfast from Cup of Joe's, courtesy of the long-lost love of my life.
In that order, Miss Hess, I want you to listen to me very carefully as to what paragraph 3 says. It says both parties to share equally unreimbursed medical expenses of the minor child. That's what the order says. You want to read it?
There is a new order.
Shh. Why? Is this order hurting you?
No,
is the order that I just read hurting you?
No, ma'am.
Sometimes it's good just to be quiet. Now you'll have to give me the new order.
She was good. She did a good job, but her character is kind of a disaster.
But her character is meant to be a disaster.
No, not like her character was flawed. This is my main problem with the movie. It's funny because it seemed perfectly fine the first time I watched it, you know, when I was just a few years out of high school. But now that I'm a little bit older, it just doesn't make sense. Like, I feel bad for this character. Like, she has no self-respect. It's a character in someone's fantasy who had some unrequited feelings of a girl in high school. And he was just hoping that she would still be waiting for him when he went back for their reunion. Like, that's the feeling I got. Because it didn't make any sense that she was so accepting of the return of John Cusack's character.
Would you like to have a little more time getting to know her character?
I would like her to have a different reaction, one that would feel more genuine. It was like it was the perfect set of circumstances where she was single and she just appeared to be waiting for him. You're not literally, but that's the sense of the movie, is that she was just waiting for him to come back, waiting for him to figure out his shit.
Well, so much so that she is, at least because of a contrivance of the plot, she is actually still living in her high school bedroom in her parents' house, decorated as if she was still in high school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It strikes me now as, like, it's this weird wish fulfillment. It's weird.
Yeah, but, let's see. How do I phrase this in the most polite way possible? It's not a documentary. You get to put your characters where you want them in a comedy film.
No, absolutely. I mean, but that just didn't ring true for me. It bothered me this time. In a way that it did not bother me the first time I watched it.
So it took you out of the movie?
It did. Like, I liked her character. I was like, don't do this to yourself. Stand up for yourself.
Brother Jay?
I don't know. I took a different approach to it. For me, I took it that she had moved on. She was exploring herself because she had talked about self-help and going through all these different stages of evaluation and life enhancement. And she was at a point in her life and he happened to come back and she was there. And so she like, well, I'll give him a chance. We'll see how it goes. It's going to be on my terms, though. She seemed empowered. She seemed strong. You know, she let herself have experiences to see who he was and where she was at in her life and move forward.
And she did come out. She did, when we meet her, he comes into her radio station. She is a DJ. And she has the upper hand in the relationship at that point. Because he's so neurotic or, well, it turns out he's psychotic, but he's, you know, he's already uncomfortable with the situation. So she comes off as pretty smooth, but not ringing true, apparently.
Nope. I liked her though. I liked her dialogue. I liked her performance. I thought she could match the sort of, like you called it, neurotic and slightly manic cadence of John Cusack. So their scenes together, I thought, were really good.
Oh, the writing in this movie is pretty crisp. I like the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
I liked seeing Jeremy Piven. I've never seen Entourage.
Entourage is great.
You know what we need to put on the list to do is a little gem called PCU.
On a tangent, there's an art installation in Los Angeles right now that is called Jerry Maguire Video. And it is, you can go in and get a membership, and it's all set up like a video store called Jerry Maguire Video. And inside, the only movie they have, and it's all on VHS, is the VHS of the movie Jerry Maguire. And they had donated like 18,000 copies of Jerry Maguire for people. They're real used copies.
That's awesome.
So, if you like absurdist art, I say visit the art collective that houses the Jerry Maguire video store.
Oh, God, I've seen PCU.
Jon Favreau, right? With dreadlocks.
What are you? you, a narc?
No, no, I'm a pre-frosh. Admissions arranged for me to spend the night at your frat.
Well, here's all you need to know. Classes, nothing before 11. Beer, it's your best friend, you drink a lot of it. Women, you're a freshman, so it's pretty much out of the question. It's a whole new ball game on campus these days, and they call it PC. Politically correct.
What do we eat?
What happened to the ozone layer?
It was last week. Oh, now it's me.
Let's do lunch.
Pride of the Port Chester Sports Program, Tom. Hippie Olympics. Swirly. But hey, it's the 90s. We'll take what we can get.
Gays in the military now.
Free Nelson Mandela.
They freed him already.
Ladies and gentlemen, I think it's time to revive an ancient tradition we seem to have long forgotten.
You guys are talking about a party.
Meet Dave and Dave are on beer.
Toss them back.
You're going to wear the shirt of the band you're going to go see. Don't be that guy.
You know, this place is kind of insane.
PCU!
Prepare yourself for initiation.
Try to relax.
So, Drew, were you from... I'm only guessing Jason is not. I could be wrong. Drew, were you familiar with Benny the Jet?
No.
Okay. So, there's a couple people trying to off Martin in his hometown. One is Felix La Poubelle, played by Benny Urquidez, I think is how you pronounce his last name, who is Benny the Jet. A world champion kickboxer, and John Cusack's personal kickboxing instructor. John Cusack was a producer in this movie, so that's why all the Cusacks are there. That's why his boxing instructor is there. Bless you, Ice.
Ice.
So,
thank you.
He plays a Basque terrorist that is very absurd, but once you realize he's John Cusack's kickboxing coach, you understand why he's there. And then we have the national security agents, Hank Azaria and K. Todd Freeman, who are kind of fun comic relief.
I was freaking out Jesse and Derek. I'm like, that's Agador Spartacus.
I really like their banter. It was so random at times.
Well, and I love the fact that they were not, you didn't quite know initially, but you found out really quickly that, oh, they actually are government agents. So they're there on a tip from Gersher, but they have to catch Martin and the act so that they can do what Gersher wants. So they can't just go kill him, even though Hank Azaria suggested at one point.
They have a whole in-depth discussion about it, good versus evil. Yes. Good guys versus bad guys.
Yeah, but they are government murderers.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's their only job is to kill.
Yeah, and it turns out everybody's a murderer here. Oh, that's not quite true. But all these main characters we've talked about so far, except for, of course, Debbie, who's just a girl, the perfect girl who's been waiting for Martin to come back.
You joke, but there's actually a scene where like he's trying to catch up with her and get to know her and finds out she's been married. He's like, tell me about your ex. No, never mind. Doesn't matter. That's sort of the sentiment of the whole movie. Whatever you've done in the past 10 years, never mind. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, but was she really married, or was she just messing with him because he was joking with her about what he did?
Well, that's
who knows?
This is the running gag. He doesn't actually joke with anybody about what he does. He tells everybody what he does.
Well, he does sometimes. Earnestly, he does too sometimes, but then he has the whole, you know, I sell biscuits and gravy.
That's true.
So he couches it. Sometimes he's very serious about it to kind of judge the audience, if you will. But other times he makes it up. I'm a couch inspector.
What do we think about the you can't go home, where he goes home and his mother is in some sort of nursing home facility, his father is dead, and the old house is turned into a Quickie Mart.
That's so hilarious to me. The whole Quickie Mart. Like, what are you doing here? Well, I work here. No, what are you doing here?
Was it too much, Drew?
No, I was a victim of my own neuroses at this point. I got really distracted thinking about how it didn't make any sense from a zoning perspective.
It's Detroit.
I know, it's so dumb. I mean, it was funny.
Yes.
I couldn't get out of my own way.
Especially because they threw in Guns N' Roses' Live and Let Die.
Oh, but I thought that was a beautiful transition where they go from the Guns N' Roses' Live and Let Die to when they go inside, you get the kind of elevator Paul McCartney version of Live and Let Die.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesse says, they're playing the same song in the store. I said, well, they paid for it, so they're probably going to play the hell out of it.
Oh, it's great. I mean, I love that little transition because it changes volume and it changes style, but it's all the same song. So, what do we think about the high school reunion itself and his classmates?
Oh, it looked terrible.
I actually wrote down... I wrote this down, and this is my original notes before I had my reunion, so, but it still holds true. All the suffering exemplifies why I avoid all of my reunions. Because it just looks like miserable, miserable, terrible torture.
It validated my decision to skip all of mine.
But early on when Martin meets back up with her at the radio station, she plays awkwardly and they play awkward together. And it's such a fantastic scene because they're both awkward and trying to maneuver around each other, and they're not sure. And then she ambushes him on the air.
Exactly, which is great. Again, he's an assassin, he's a cold-blooded killer, but he can't talk to a girl.
Nope.
Which is fun, it humanizes him. And we get to hear all these songs, because she happens to be a disc jockey.
By the way, is there any evidence that he's actually a good assassin?
Well, I was going to mention that. He never actually successfully does anything but defend himself in this movie. I actually had in my notes, that, so does the poison down the string trick, has it ever worked in any movie? No, not yet. Such a ridiculous idea. It's hilarious that they used that as one of the things.
What Bond movie was that in? That wasn't in Live and Let Die, right?
No, that was in...
You Only Live Twice?
I think so.
That would have been hilarious, though.
The Japanese one.
Yes.
Yes, indeed, yes. So, what? Just skip around just a little bit. What song should I use for the opening from the soundtrack? I mean, there's, of course, Blister in the Sun...
No.
Not I Can See Clearly Now.
No.
Probably not either Live or Let Dies. I really like the song Pressure Drop. Although this is not the version, the specials version that they play. I think that's fine or whatever, but like I said, I'm not a big fan of that necessarily. But I really like from the Izzy Stradlin and the Juju Hounds album. I like their version of Pressure Drop.
Ace of Spades.
Ace of Spades by Motorhead?
Oh, it's hard. There's so much good music in this, but there's also... No.
No? No, not Walk Like an Egyptian?
No.
The Pete Townsend one.
Oh.
When everything feels all over, everybody seems unkind.
Like, if you're not tapping your foot to that song, you're dead inside.
Yeah, I hate that song.
Really? Yeah. Under Pressure?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect sentiment for the movie.
Okay. Under Pressure, not 99 Luftballons?
99 no. Luftballon.
Ach, Heidi, your balloons are so red.
Very nice.
I saw that one coming.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so Under Pressure it is. Which is also a brilliant song. I mean, I think that's one of the best songs ever written. Performed, actually. Maybe not the best
there's
songs
also, ever written. There's some really interesting choices to music in this movie, too. There's a Tracy Bonham track that I really like, which I own the CD to. There's a Faith No More track from the original Faith No More album before Epic, which was when they still had their first lead singer before he went somewhere else.
That's We Care A Lot.
Before Mike Patton came on board. Yeah.
There's a song by Bobby Bear. Bobby Bear.
There's a ton of music in this movie. It's really kind of bizarre.
Bobby Bear, Kick Me Jesus through the goalposts of life.
Drop kick me Jesus through the goalposts of life. End over end, neither left nor to right. Straight through the heart of them righteous uprights. Drop kick me Jesus through the goalposts of life.
So let's see. We can yada yada some of it because there's some hijinks.
The breakfast shop between the grocer and Martin, that whole scene is hilarious.
That's fascinating. Is there anything else you want to talk about? Because I was going to have breakfast.
I heard about that little blow-up at the Altamart. It was a wicked ripping shame.
One of yours? One of your fraternal brothers?
No. Hey, listen, I want to work with you. I was some indie frog, some bass quacker from the Pyrenees. Are you sure Oregon doesn't ring a bell? Pacific Northwest. A couple of months ago, something about you doing some wonder dog named Cujo. Oh,
Boudreaux. Yes, Boudreaux. Jesus Christ.
Who knows the dogs?
Yeah, I was out there trying to whack these three junk bond fuckos. Yeah. And these idiots were flushing game with sticks of dynamite. And the dog that they borrowed, little Boudreaux, was a retriever. Get it? Boudreaux was never a target. Boudreaux was acting on instinct. I would never hurt an animal. And I'm offended at the accusation.
Whoa, Chatty Cathy. Clip your string. I don't need to know. But just for the record, here's what I heard. The Marks borrowed your client's prize hunting pup. So bad luck for Boudreaux and bad luck for Blank. Poodle pumper. Hound hitter. Pooch puncher.
Well, let's not talk about Boudreaux, huh? What about those two guys in a Caprice Classic outside? The word is you turned two governments on me, you turncoat.
Me?
You.
Goji?
Yes.
On you?
Yes.
Never. Listen. Let me get our relationship straight for a minute,
all right? I didn't get into this business having relationships. I don't want to join your goddamn union, all right? Loner, lone gunman, get it? That's the whole point. I like the lifestyle, the image, look at the way I dress. Why don't you become a cop or something? You can have coffee in the morning with friends. Look, this is a one-on-one business. The minute you start relationships, bad things start happening. If it'll make you feel any better, I think this is my last job.
Oh, so what do you
say?
That.
What do you say we put away our guns? And forget the whole goddamn thing and have some breakfast, all right?
No scabs. From now on, all arrangements, all contracts, all engagements are regulated. You got it?
We'll meet the new boss.
Yes.
No deal.
Okay. But we're not going to let you do your little job here.
No?
No. Because we're going to do it for you.
Is that right?
And after we do your job, we're going to do another little job.
Tell me about it.
Like I'm going to put a bullet hole in your fucking forehead and I'm going to fuck the brain hole.
Nice talk, sugar mouth.
Do you have the Nada omelet? Ooh.
And Dan Aykroyd has some great, there's some great one-liners where he tells, almost, it's a dad line. Hey, Chatty Cathy, cut your string.
Oh, yeah. No, he's got some great lines in here. He's very quippy. To the end, he's very quippy.
Yep.
And I thought the action scenes were pretty good in this movie.
Yeah, they were.
It was all well choreographed. There was, gunfights and also hand-to-hand combat. Very nicely choreographed.
Another great line. how's your life? And he responds, Martin responds, in progress.
Yeah. Everybody gets the perfect lines.
Some people who are Walking Dead fans will notice that Abraham is in this, so.
The you want to do some blow?
Yeah. The poetry dude.
Yes. Yes.
But I love Joan Cusack's outfits throughout this movie, which are hilarious. Also, the fact that when she's setting fire to the place, she's smoking a cigarette while she's pouring gasoline out everywhere.
Oh, I love the fact that she gets to put her call with Martin on hold and talk to a vendor who didn't supply the right amount of ammunition or the right kind of ammunition.
That'd be great if you could find that out.
Okay, got it.
Bye-bye.
Amelia? Wait, hold on a second. Pacific Triangle Global. Janice? Yeah, no, where the fuck is it? I ordered 3 days ago. No, that doesn't work. That's not right. Let me go over it again, all right? Let's see. 3,000 rounds of 9mm subsonic. You had that. I gave that to you on the fucking list. Well, I don't give a goddamn where it is. You get it here now. Amelia? I'm sorry. Yeah, no. It's not going to be a boring soup. That's just the base. You put the chicken in, you've got to add other flavors. Carrots and celery are just a base of a soup.
I love that scene. She was so great.
And then towards the end, you get Martin's speech about finding a higher power, which is kind of moving.
I was sitting there alone on prom night in that goddamn rented tuxedo, and the whole night flashed before my eyes, and I realized finally, and for the first time, that I wanted to kill somebody. So I figured since I loved you so much, it'd be a good idea if I didn't see you anymore. They're right behind us. So I was in the Gulf last year. I was doing this thing. Anyway, I came up over this dune, and I saw the ocean, and it was on fire. I mean, the whole thing, it was beautiful. And I just sat down, and I watched it burn. And I got the sneaking, dark suspicion that maybe there was meaning to life. You know, a point, like an organic connection between all living things. I don't know, God, a Yahweh, a higher power, I don't know, whatever you want to call it.
Don't move.
Yeah, kind of. He's still an assassin.
He's still a killer, yeah. No, I have no illusion. Also, there's a very, you know, Jenna Elfman is in this too.
So what do we think about the end? Without even the need to give it away necessarily.
I thought it was a good end.
Now, the director wanted everybody to die.
That would have been better. I at least wanted him to end up alone. He did not deserve to get the girl.
Even though he saved her dad?
He also went there to kill her dad.
Yeah. Well, and her dad gave her away in marriage.
It's true.
I like the fact that they don't really discuss. I mean, the dad was going to testify against something, but they don't really discuss too much about what that is or what that entails, because it doesn't really matter.
It's just a MacGuffin.
Yeah, it allows you to like the dad still.
It was against Big Auto, right?
Yeah, exactly. It was like some windshield wiper thing, right?
Leaky sunroofs.
Oh, leaky sunroofs. Yeah. So.
Leaky boom boom down.
It's been a long time since we had a visit from Snow.
Does snow last longer than Santa Barbara?
Oh, no.
I don't think so, no. Because remember, did he go to jail? I think he went to jail.
No, I meant as far as our podcast goes.
No, he only showed up in two to three episodes.
Yeah, but well, and plus...
And we've discussed Santa Barbara more times.
Yeah, and it'll come up now as well.
Yes.
I got to use the Santa Barbara theme in the soap dish episode. Did you notice that?
Yes.
Because there wasn't really any other music to speak of.
I was actually mocking and singing it. I was mock singing the theme song in the car.
Hilarious.
out loud, very loudly. I'm sure people thought I was a lunatic. In traffic,
I mean, I'm sure it's a douchey move for me to say it was hilarious that I put that in there, but I thought it was hilarious.
I laughed.
It was hilarious.
Yeah. So Robert Ebert gave this film 2.5 stars out of 4. He liked the chemistry between the lead actors and enjoyed the dialogue, but he considered it a near miss because he thought there was a wittier, more clever ending awaiting that could have been employed.
I don't know. I kind of like some of the ending, especially the action and the Dan Aykroyd's head in a TV is hilarious.
Oh yeah, like I said, he was quippy to the end. That was fun. By the way, I know it's Roger Ebert, and I don't know why I'm inflicting punishment on Drew. He just said one malapropism.
It's fine. Everything's fine.
Funny because it's true.
No, but by the way, I didn't even know why. What you're talking about as far as a Yukon Jack balloon, I just thought it was some sort of liquor reference that I didn't know because I'm not a drinker.
Well, apparently I am too much of one because I couldn't get Union Jack to come out of my mouth.
So have either of you seen the 2008 film War Incorporated? War Inc.?
That sounds familiar.
John Cusack, Joan is his assistant, Dan Aykroyd has a supporting role. It's supposed to be the unofficial sequel.
Oh.
Nope. I'm thinking of a different movie.
Yeah, me too. So yeah, I have to look. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it.
No. Well, maybe we should add to the list.
Yeah, perhaps that would be a good idea.
Hilary Duff.
I was thinking of Lord of War with Nicolas Cage.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
John Cusack, Hilary Duff, Marissa Tomei, Joan Cusack, Dan Aykroyd, John McLaughlin, Montel Williams, Ben Kingsley. Good grief.
Oh, God bless Ben Kingsley. He's the Michael Caine school of acting. Take any role in any movie.
Wow. It did not do well. Wow. Yikes. So the budget was $10 million. The gross was $578,000.
When was it released? 1998?
2008.
2008, I'm sorry. So there's nothing you could pin that. If it was, like, let's say it was September 2001, I could understand how maybe they pulled it from the theaters. But $500,000 is the gross?
They filmed it in 2 months.
Well, I hope they got a good write-off. The studio got a good write-off on that movie against some summer blockbuster or something.
You would hope so. Good grief. It's dubbed in Hungarian, apparently.
Oh, well, that's good. So, any other notes on Gross Point Blank? I really enjoyed myself. I mean, I'll just spoil it. I loved it. I thought it was fun. I was able to suspend my disbelief. I understand exactly what you're talking about, Drew, but I just don't think I cared at the time. I was more distracted by his height. But, of course, now that you mention it now, I won't be able to think of anything else but how her character should have been stronger. Her character was stronger in Will and Grace, let me tell you.
I think Jeremy Piven was the best friend ever.
He was down for pretty much anything.
And then, but he has that nice rejoinder at the end. What do you do for a living, Martin? And just walks off.
So, Brother Jay, your verdict?
I still love this movie, even after we're having watched it twice in 2 years now. I guess maybe a little longer than 2 years. It doesn't seem like that long ago. But no, I say this is, I consider this to be an A movie. A minus, but I like it. It still makes me laugh. And it holds up. It's not too terribly dated.
Brother Drew, was it worth it?
Oh, yeah, it was worth it. It had really good performances. A good, non-annoying performance from Dan Aykroyd. Minnie Driver was great and enjoyable. I miss Minnie Driver being a thing. She had a good run there in the mid to late 90s. So it was good to see her in the movie. John Cusack did a good job, although his character got a little annoying. But yeah, I'd say it's worth it just for Alan Arkin.
Oh, agreed. and for Joan Cusack.
Yes, absolutely.
Awesome. So, anything else before we move to housekeeping?
Nope.
Housekeeping. No. So, Jason, any housekeeping?
Let's see. Did listen to the latest podcast.
Your mother wants a copy of George Michael's Faith. Yeah.
Yeah, I was talking to her about that today. So, I was listening to the West Wing Weekly podcast today. An episode that it was mentioned that Malice was a Sorkin film screenplay, which I don't know if we realized or mentioned when we recorded Malice, but it makes sense.
Oh, you must have. We're going to talk about Sorkin next week when we talk about one of his favorite movies, one of the most influential movies on his career, the movie Network.
So I was listening to that. Rob Lowe had a big interview and he was talking about Alec Baldwin was almost the Sam Seaborn character on West Wing, but I think he was too old.
It's funny. All the rules have changed about casting the White House.
But I did appreciate listening to Drew and I both simultaneously chastise you for making too soon in the Challenger references.
Yeah. Being put in my place is always funny to me.
Yes. But other than that, no real housekeeping coming up. Just kind of...
Also, I didn't remember that for no reason, just taken a shot at Dad, who wasn't there to defend himself.
Which one was that?
When you were trying to make the joke about... The Challenger teacher's eyes.
Eyes, yes.
Well, credit where credit's due. That is where we got the joke from.
Well, yeah. But he had nothing to do with this iteration of it.
Very true.
Drew, any housekeeping?
I saw Rogue One.
And what'd you think?
It was great. I loved it. I recommend it. Not for kids. Like my oldest daughter is all in on Star Wars right now, but I will not be taking her to see Rogue One, and I probably will not be showing it to her for a few years.
I have way too much to do tomorrow on paper, but I was fantasizing a little bit about going to the movies because the movie called Rings is out. So basically, if I had a choice between seeing The Ring 3 or Rogue One by myself, which one should I see?
If you love Star Wars, I would go with Rogue One.
I don't know if I do.
Yeah, if you don't, then go see something that's more up your alley.
It's funny, because I don't have anything against Star Wars. I grew up with Star Wars. I love the whole Star Wars universe, but I still haven't seen The Force Awakens. Don't really have an interest.
Rogue One is like 75% fan service.
Is it, what you're saying is not for kids, is that because, is it more of like a noir thriller than a science fiction fantasy serial kind of thing?
The tone is way different. It's a more grown-up tone. There's a lot more moral ambiguity associated with the rebellion. And if you paid attention at all in Star Wars, the first movie, you know how it ends.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. I watched a couple of movies. I saw The Accountant with your mother. I thought it was surprisingly good and also appropriate to this movie. Have you guys seen it?
No.
Oh, but the premise sounds ridiculous.
Oh, it's ridiculous, but it's Ben Affleck. Fun. Yeah, it's fun though.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. It has good pacing. I rewatched.
That's important.
After watching the movie 31 last week, I rewatched the movie House of a Thousand Corpses. To see if Rob Zombie actually ever did a good movie. I was going to watch both House of a Thousand Corpses and The Devil's Rejects, but I got sidetracked. I'll tell you about that in a second. I will highly recommend House of a Thousand Corpses for a couple of reasons. Sid Haig is amazing. Chris Hardwick, a fat Chris Hardwick, and Rainn Wilson are great. Sherry Moon, later Sherry Moon Zombie, is the worst. But I think that may be as directed, but she's really bad. However, I think the rest of it actually works. It's kind of, you know, it's an homage to, like, Texas Chainsaw Massacre and those 70s gritty movies. So I'm going to revisit The Devil's Rejects probably this week later. But, yeah, so I give thumbs up to House of a Thousand Corpses. Yeah, this may not be much more of Rob Zombie than I'm willing to embrace after that. Figuratively, I don't embrace any of what Rob Zombie has, personally. Then I watched Dawn of the Dead. The original.
Which one?
Yeah, the original one.
Yeah.
And this may sound sacrilegious, but it's a fun movie, but the acting is not good. The special effects do not hold up. Most of the zombie special effects involve really bad blue face paint. And it may have been for, like, lighting and color correction reasons, but at least the version that I'm watching, it's just a regular DVD, it seems pretty crisp, but it just comes out looking bad. It's a great B-movie, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed it, but it is technically not a good movie. So there's that.
That's funny. My memory of it is that the whole thing has like a blue tint to it.
Not so much. If you want to see special effects master Tom Savini ham it up as an extra, part of a motorcycle gang, this is the movie for you. But, you know, considering what they did, like, Night of the Living Dead is still, I consider that like a masterpiece. Super low budget, but they did what they did really well. And maybe they used blue face paint for the zombies in that movie too, but because it was black and white, you didn't have to worry about that. So, yeah, I'm going to go for Day of the Dead next and see if that holds up. And I also want to watch the remake of The Dawn of the Dead because I remember liking that quite a bit. So we'll see if that holds up. Well, I think it has John Leguizamo in it, right? It's not always a positive. Or am I thinking of Land of the Dead?
I don't remember. He was in Land of the Dead.
Okay, so it was Land of the Dead.
Dawn of the Dead has, like, Mekhi Phifer in it, right?
Yeah, and Sarah Pauli, maybe? Mm-hmm. Ving Rhames?
And it's no movie. There's no Mekhi Phifer. Sorry, that was an 8 Mile reference.
Huh. I've never seen 8 Mile. I hear it has to do with spaghetti. I'm not really a pasta fan. I've got two podcast recommendations. One is Monster Party, which is these four guys who talk about horror movies, monster movies. They like, you know, they're also like monster toy collectors and stuff. They have a lot of talk about Planet of the Apes, and at least one of them has a lot of toys that are still in the original wrapper. But it's fun. I recommend the one with Jimmy Pardo relatively recently to start with, perhaps. But I also recommend the podcast In the Dark. Have you heard about this?
No.
They think of Serial, the podcast, but it's all about the Jacob Wetterling murder, the abduction. Jacob Wetterling is why we have the sex offender registry. Megan's Law is actually an offshoot of Jacob Wetterling Law, and I think it's like 10 episodes, and it's pretty good. It's they tell you up front what the surprise is, because there was a turn in the case recently after 27 years, but they talk about how being named a person of interest will ruin somebody's life, especially if it turns out they're not the bad guy. How the way law enforcement deals with the media and how media deals with suspects is just interesting to me. So I recommend In the Dark. There's apparently another case they're doing for next season of the show, But I don't think they've picked that, or if they've picked it, they haven't announced what it is yet. But I didn't really like Serial, but In the Dark I recommend highly. Oh, I also recommend another horror movie that I revisited, The Exorcist 3. I know, you're thinking, everybody loves The Exorcist 3, why are you bringing this up?
Isn't that the one where there are two different versions by two different directors?
Oh, I don't think so. Maybe, but I don't think so.
That or was that the Exorcist prequel?
Oh, I think that must have been the Exorcist prequel. Because Exorcist 3 is George C. Scott, who... I thought George C. Scott was one of those actors that was good in everything. He's not. He is overacting crazily in this movie.
Wait, so you thought he was good in Firestarter?
In Firestarter? Yeah. I haven't seen that in so long. I'd be interested in revisiting that movie.
Drew Barrymore and I can't even remember who played her dad, right? Kurt Russell? Or am I wrong?
My first thought was William Catt, but that's not can't be it either. Harry Hamlin, something like that.
No, William Catt was one of the minions in Octopussy.
David Keith.
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe George C. Scott isn't good in stuff. I don't know. I've never seen Pat.
No, he was good. He was good in Doctor Strangelove.
That's true. But he was kind of over the top in that too, obviously. But he was shockingly over the top. Like, his character would just burst out in the stuff. But it also reminded me that Brad Dourif, no relation to Steve Dorff, or is it Steve Dorff and Brad Dourif? Anyway, Brad Dourif is really compelling. I can't tell whether he's a good actor either, but he plays what he plays very well.
He's a good actor. He was in Deadwood, and he was great.
Yeah, I think... So, I don't recommend Exorcist 3, but I kind of see why there's a certain love for it, in the same reason why there's a love for, you know, Halloween, Season of the Witch, because it's not really... I mean, it's a little bit related. Like, they actually talk about Father Karras and everything, but it's not the same level of movie that The Exorcist is. But it's got some really interesting visuals, including a super scary little scene that I will include a clip of. If you go to our website, I'll include a little YouTube embedded video of a maybe 20-second scene that is just kind of frightening. Less so if you're prepared for it, so I apologize for spoiling it. The end is a little bit shocking. But yeah, so next week, Network. That's going to be the first movie that's been on my list for the first time in a while. So hopefully you guys will enjoy the experience, because I have a lot to say about Network. And I think that's it for us for this episode. Until next week. Tally ho, or what? There should be some sort of, I don't know. What do we... Till next time.
Heidi, auf Wiedersehen.
Very nice. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.